Hello everybody. We are now coming towards the end of our prolonged, quite informative and detailed discussion on logistics and distribution management. And in this chapter, which is the 17th one, and the subsequent one, which is the last one, the 18th chapter, we will concentrate primarily on the international logistics, international shipping, the rules and regulations related to international commerce, certain specific things like Incoterms, types of shipping lines, etc., because we have dealt quite significantly with the domestic part of logistics. We have also touched upon international logistics in one of the earlier chapters, but here we are going to go into slightly more details and then end our discussion on logistics management. So in the 17th chapter, which is this one, we are going to look at international logistics and intermodal transport, how the use of different types of transport is a very necessary, or it's rather a prerequisite for international logistics. So we're going to look at that and the types of intermodal transportations which are generally used today. So let's proceed. International trade is not different from domestic trade as the motivation and the behavior of parties involved in a trade do not change fundamentally regardless of whether the trade is across the border or not. So the main considerations, like that of the existence of a purchase order, the existence of a consideration, quantity of goods, the quality of goods being predefined, etc., remain the same. The main difference is that international trade is typically more costlier than domestic trade, primarily because you are covering a longer distance, you are covering things which need more detailed attention, so it's more costly. Another difference between domestic and international trade is that the factors of production, such as capital and labor, are typically more mobile within a country than when you are crossing geographic boundaries. Trade in goods and services can serve as a substitute for trade in the factors of production. Now, if you go back slightly in history, in macroeconomic theory, you will see that the origin of such international trade, you need to look at what the father of modern economics, Adam Smith, said way back in 1776 in his epoch, in its one-of-a-kind work, which is still undisputed in terms of the innovation that he brought around, The Wealth of Nations. His theory of absolute advantage, as propounded in The Wealth of Nations 1776, very briefly means this: the capability of one country to produce more of a product with the same amount of input than another country. Like, there's a difference between two persons in terms of their efficiency, there's a difference between two nations when it comes to their efficiency related to one particular product. So, produce only goods where you are most efficient, trade for those where you are not efficient. So, you should not produce things where you are not very efficient. The same concept is used by companies today when they outsource logistics activities, when they outsource certain parts of their business, because they think that that is not their core area. Similarly, that is what Adam Smith said, that concentrate on what you can produce best with less resources, more output, and trade. So export those and import things which are scarce, which are more difficult to produce. Trade between countries is therefore beneficial. It assumes that there is an absolute advantage and balance parity between nations. Few years later, David Ricardo's theory of comparative advantage, as written in his book The Principles of Political Economy in 1817, says that extend free trade argument, efficiency of resource utilization, it leads to more productivity. So when you have such efficient use of resources to produce one good by one country, another by another, it leads to more productivity as a whole. One country should import even if the country is more efficient in the product's production than a country from which it is buying. Look to see how much more efficient you are. If only comparatively efficient, then only you should import. It makes better use of resources. Trade is a positive sum game. Simple extensions of the Ricardian model of diminishing returns. More a country produces, at some point it will require more resources. However, free trade can increase a country's production resources and increase the efficiency of resource utilization. Now, the historical development of international logistics. The history of international trade chronicles notable events that have affected the trade between various countries. In the era before the rise of the nation state, the term international trade cannot be literally applied, but it simply means trade over long distances, the sort of movement in goods which would represent international trade in the modern world. So, if you look at graphically, you had the earliest days in the 16th, 17th century, the slow development, then you move towards speed, industrial revolution, then you come towards emphasis on customer satisfaction and the goal or the journey towards getting a strategic advantage for your company, for your product. The early slow days, the first international logisticians were traders on the Silk Road, a silk route which is called thus a well-traveled trade route in use for over 3,000 years stretching from Europe, Asia and passing through the Middle East. Early modern traders were concerned primarily with ensuring goods that arrived at their destination in good condition and at the lowest possible cost. So, even though this was a very simplistic desire requirement, it still remains so. Today also, you look at the logistics manager's primary concern that the goods must reach the customer in good condition and at the lowest possible cost. Following the Second World War, logistics began to incorporate the techniques used by the military. You know, logistics as a term has perhaps origins in France in the 16th century. You know, it was the role of the military support functions which would get the food, the ammunition and other requirements for the soldiers who were fighting in the front. That is how the word logistics came into existing. So, it does have a military origin. Logistics began to refer to not just the movement of goods, but also to sales, procurement of supplies and the management of supplier and customer relationships. International logistics, if you look at the historical development, the move towards speed, the introduction of containers or boxes in the late 1950s and their eventual widespread adoption made shipping much more convenient, popular and widespread. In the 1970s, new companies like FedEx, DHL introduced time-defined air shipping services and gained a large market share in domestic shipments. In the 1980s, international air shipments grew as costs came down and the number of destinations increased. Air transport became cost competitive with ocean transport for many products. For especially low-weight, high-value products, it makes much more sense to use air than sea. Suppose you are going to send a pack of temperature control injection or a vaccine to somewhere 1,000 or 5,000 kilometers away, you just cannot send it by sea. It is not worth the time. If you send it by a normal mode, it will reach much faster. And as a comparison to the value of the product, your air freight might be insignificant. But air freight in many cases is just the opposite. There are many cases where I have seen where the import of goods by air, the value of the invoice, the value of the material which is sent by the supplier is less than your air freight, which is a very precarious condition, but at times unavoidable. The emphasis on customer satisfaction, the very high interest rates of 1980s led to companies to reduce inventory levels. New inventory management techniques were created to reduce inventory costs. This was also the era where ERPs gained a lot of prevalence. So, with the use of goods systems, inventory visibility improved considerably and palpably. The emphasis on customer satisfaction, those new techniques included just-in-time, which is the Kanban, which was primarily used first by Toyota in Japan, or companies like Motorola, wherein you had the process, the manufacturing process, for example, broken into various parts, and one part would issue the material as an input to the next part, and the goods will not be kept in inventory, but they will come just in time and passed on. Thus, you know, avoiding a lot of idle costs, idle time, and wastage of working capital lying in terms of inventory. You had materials requirement planning, which was the precursor to ERP, MRP2, DRP, which is distribution planning. Since these techniques relied on rapid and reliable deliveries, logistics firms provided reduced shipping times and time-defined deliveries. The emphasis on customer satisfaction, JIT, just-in-time manufacturing, is a process that plans for parts to arrive on the assembly line just before they are needed. The goal of this technique is to reduce or eliminate the need for inventory. It now includes the delivery of parts to the assembly plant just before they are needed, and the delivery of the finished goods just as the retail store is running out of the stock. This you do because both your supplier and yourself, you are connected with each other, you have trust amongst yourself, you are sharing the systems and sharing information very transparently. JIT has become a part of standard operations management practices in most manufacturing facilities. It, however, involves a certain amount of risk if the supply chain is disrupted, as production may have to shut down due to lack of materials. Computer-based techniques like MRP, ERPs are very, very important, and you cannot think of a modern global enterprise without these elements. These allow manufacturing firms to determine what to produce and in which quantity in function of their sales forecast and pending customer orders. The emphasis on customer satisfaction. DRP is a tool that allows a retail firm to determine what to order from its suppliers, in which quantity, when, and in what function it sells to retail customers. Now, all this MRP 1, 2, DRP, all this is now amalgamated into ERP. You have products like SAP, which have the sales and distribution module, which is to do with material and the sales, the materials management module does with material masters, PRs, POs, etc. You have the production planning module, advanced versions like APO, etc. You have the FICO, you have the business warehouse, you have MySAP HR, you have EHS, etc. So all modules are now integrated into a good ERP package. Now, what is strategic advantage? International logistics management has become a strategic advantage giver for the firms that are capable of containing the costs of shipping in view of increased fuel costs, providing visibility in the supply chain or the ability to determine where a particular shipment is located at any given point in time. It is very important. If you are a person responsible for both procurement and logistics, then when your incoming materials are expected, you need to know where they are. When you are a supplier and you are sending it to your customer, you need to know where your shipment is so that you have the visibility. Why do you need to have the visibility? Because your final aim is to give visibility to your customer, because he needs to know when he is going to get his product. So all these tools give you that. Providing reliable, dependable deliveries, ensuring the security of the goods while they are in transit, and engaging in sustainable and environmentally friendly practices. So these are all things that give you a strategic advantage. So, what is international logistics? It is the process of planning, implementing, and controlling the flow and storage of goods, services, and related information from the point of origin to the point of consumption located in different countries. So if you see, the definition is the same as that of logistics, only it is that it starts from one country, ends in another country. This definition accounts for all the intricacies inherent to crossing the borders. Here we are graphically trying to show the evolution of logistics, how it, you know, moved from being a fragmented concept in 1960s to an integrated concept in 80s and total integration in the 1990s and in the earlier part of the 21st century. So you had, you know, demand forecasting, purchasing, requirement planning, all getting merged into materials management. You have warehousing, packaging, etc., FG inventory in logistics, and finally everything getting, you know, finally all gets amalgamated into supply chain management, which is the mother concept of the universal set. Domestic and international logistics. Logistics functions are same for both, but there are four D's in which you can say that international logistics is different from domestic logistics. One is the distance, the type of documents required, the diversity of cultures that you need to address to when you are crossing continents and countries, diversity in the demands of the customer. So developing strategies to respond to these 4D environment is a global challenge for logistics functions. What makes international logistics different from logistics in general? International logistics management is more complicated because of the differences in the international trading environment. So you have differences in documentation, types of packaging, different. So if you are sending a product from, say, let's say from India to Thailand, for example, so you might need to, you will need to have your labels, etc., in the local language, which you need to develop here, give it to them perhaps for checking of the artwork, etc. You need to get their prices printed in the local language and then send it to them. Various types of documentation when you are dealing in international, cross-country shipments, you need to probably try to have a common currency in which you invoice, etc. International logistics gains significant attention mainly because of its complexity and uncertainty. International logistics is fueled by the process of globalization, but there are many similarities between domestic and international logistics. The structural characteristics are the same, like managing the movement and storage of products, similar framework linking supply sources, plants, warehouses and customers, functional processes, inventory, order processing, carrier selection, and finally information. The motto of customer service remains the same whether your customer is within the country or beyond the country. The differences must be viewed in two parts. Part of international logistics systems where the flow of network ties one nation to another. Physical distance, currency variation and exchange rate differences, border crossing regulations, customs, formalities are different in different countries. Transportation modes are going to be different. The other difference is in the set of subsystems which exist within each nation, state or market. These differences are classified as country specific differences, which include intermediaries vary, reliability of carriers may be different, computation of freight rates may be different, packaging and labeling requirements will be different. So thus it becomes a very complicated process which needs to be handled meticulously and for which you need proper trained personnel to be present. Now the impact of international logistics. Today's global logistics environment is characterized by an increasing complexity, speed, trends changing very frequently, new developments in the areas of collaboration. Data integration and big data is another key area impacting logistics. The internet, machine to machine linkages impacts how companies do things and manage logistics. Shipment reliability is very important. Just because you do not know the shipping lines which operate in a particular country, or you are not sure about the domestic transportation carriers, etc., you cannot shy away from your responsibility to deliver materials on time to your customer who is in another country. Logistical costs are 10% to 30% of total landed cost of an international order. The complexities of international logistics, the nature of international markets differ in terms of the tastes, languages, cultures, traditions, politics, nature of procurement or sourcing, different expectations from customer service, problem with quality control. Now here again, cultures, traditions, politics, for example, when you have issues in a particular region, it becomes difficult to source materials. In many times we see in international transactions that, when you have a particular political issue in a, let's say a political issue in the Middle East, which might hamper the free movement of goods across the Europe to Asia So then you can see a huge spike in prices, etc. So international trade is very complicated, and matters beyond economics has the impact on finally the economic pricing model which will be prevalent. Divergent currencies and exchange rates are there. So for example, you had finalized an order for a raw material which would come from let's say the United States to India, for example, or Europe to India. By the time you place the order and by the time your material arrived, you might have a devaluation of the currency. Let's say here the Indian currency gets devalued theoretically. Then although your price doesn't change, it remains X dollars or X euros. What you finally pay to the customer will depend on the day in which you are remitting the exchange, for example, unless of course you have hedged your, you have taken a forward cover, etc. You are going to lose money if your currency depreciates. You can relatively gain if your currency has appreciated. Multinational global carriers are, you know, difficult at times to deal with because you have a long distance, at times communication issues will come. So it's better to use companies who have a pan world presence, like DHL for example, or the Maersk, Sea Line or Hapag, etc. So things which will help you finally to streamline your deliveries. Differences in infrastructure, size of ports, roads, railways, etc. differ, and the customs and the legal frameworks will differ from country to country. Magnitude of international logistics. To effectively serve global markets, firms should consider adopted integrated worldwide strategies. Global firms typically design synchronous strategies around the technology. The logistics systems have had the effect of shrinking the world, empowering competitive trade. Lower labor costs from international outsourcing will is a critical component of the supply chain. Focused manufacturing fits well into an international logistics strategy. The longer the supply chain, the more cooperation and coordination is required between production, marketing, purchasing and the logistics teams. There are many multinational corporations today which have very long supply chain networks. You will have, let's say for example, a raw material which the company will be producing in a few manufacturing plants across the world. Let's say for example, this plant is in Latin America. Now, one of the components to make that raw material might be coming from India. So, the raw material, one of the raw material travels from India to Latin America, it makes the raw material. Then, the raw material goes as the input to the finished goods in manufacturing sites which are present across the world. One such site may be in India. So, you have an intermediary coming from India to Latin America, getting converted. Then that second stage material comes back to India as a raw material, gets converted into a finished goods and then travels to Europe, America or somewhere else. So that's the kind of movement that we are talking about in international trade and commerce, which makes it slightly more complicated than domestic logistics. For global markets, customer service strategies contain four characteristics. Marketing becomes standardized yet customized. Product life cycles shorten, sometimes to less than 1 year. Outsourcing and offshore manufacturing are becoming more prevalent. Marketing and manufacturing activities and strategies tend to converge and be better coordinated in terms of the firms operating globally. As a result, logistics networks tend to become more expansive and complex. Managing the rising logistics costs. Logistics costs now represent a larger percentage of sales. These costs are driven both by internal as well as external factors. Supply and demand curves, tight schedules, capacity levels for ocean shipping place upward pressure on the costs. Given the impact of internal and external factors, it is required to develop an overall strategic approach to leverage economies of scale, improve import decision support and increase lane densities. So the aim finally of the logistics manager is to bulldoze the costs, try to grind them to the barest possible extent. Components of international logistics management. The major components of international logistics management are enlisted below: international transportation, international insurance, packaging, international terms of trade, and international terms of payment.